Hi, friends. The world got you down? Don't be sad. Listen to $2 Late Fee with Zach and Dustin.
$2 Late Fee is the podcast that celebrates the best decade of entertainment, the 1980s. We pick a movie and soundtrack from our youth that we loved and see if it holds up today. We also interview your favorite celebrities from that era.
All in the spirit of positivity and togetherness. Check us out at $2LateFee.com.
So I'm going to go out on a limb. You made a comment on an earlier recording that there was still a parody on this album that is your favorite. I'm curious if this is the one.
It is not.
Okay. Okay. I was like, the only reason I ask is because I'm like, man, we do have like these two like kind of more lo-fi Dr. Demento ones. I'm glad to hear that because I would say of all the parodies, this is probably my least favorite on this one.
Yeah.
And I think part of it is that, like, I know that Stop Dragging My Heart Around was apparently a huge hit, but I have really no emotional connection to this original song in the slightest.
Agreed. It's really interesting because this, by every measure, this was a big hit at the time, but it has not, as best I can tell, it has not stood the test of time the way a lot of, the fact that this is like a Tom Petty, Stevie Nicks collaboration thing.
Yeah,
like
two artists I love.
Yeah. But
and could not care less about this collaboration.
It's not that great to me. The original song is fine. Like, I think it's fine, but it's just nothing super special. And yeah, this does not bring up weird nostalgic feelings for me in the way that I Love Rocky Road does, any of that kind of stuff. Like, those feel like, you know, something we're going to talk about a lot, because for the most part, Al's ability to pick a song to parody and know that that track will stand the test of time is unbelievable.
When he whiffs, he whiffs hard.
Sometimes he picks something to parody and now you look back and you're like, what even was this?
I would argue, and I'm playing my hand a little, actually no, I'm not playing my hand, because I do love this album.
Yeah.
I think Polka Party might have the biggest amount of swing and misses on thinking that songs were going to be bigger than they actually were.
That might be true. Yeah.
Like, and I think even he's admitted to that. Like, he was like, we were really like, cause you look at that album and I think it's like every song on that album he parodied was a song that was there to promote a movie. And his expectation was like, well, these were all big movies, so like obviously these songs are going to be huge, and then like none of them were.
Big movies with songs by big artists.
Yeah,
like it's like it was a good guess. I mean, he was guessing right, but again, in the context of his career spanning so long, and generally speaking, when he does a parody, he's doing a parody of a recent song. There's a couple exceptions to that, but for the most part, he is parodying something that's very of the moment. Funny enough, this album is an example of ones that are. He picks on some stuff from different time periods on this record a little bit.
Kind of, but kind of not at the same time. I know what you're talking about because you talk about like My Bologna and Another One Rides the Bus are on this, which were both like pretty old at the time the record came out. But at the time that the singles came out, they were fresh.
You know what? You're right. That's true. Because this was made over a longer period of time than most of his music. Yeah. You're right about that.
And even like when you get on the Dare to Be Stupid with Yoda, like that was written for this album. And they had a bunch of issues with it. Then obviously, I'll tell this quick side story because it is going to be a really long time until we get to this album. But I'm sure you remember it was about a decade ago when he did the You Can Have Whatever You Like parody.
Yes.
And it was the first time that Weird Al's parody was on the charts at the same time as the song that was being parodied. And that was kind of when Al decided that he was going to start doing like way more digital download stuff because he's like, oh, it'll help me stay relevant.
And ironically, is that also the only song that the parody is the same name?
I believe so. I believe that that will be
because Weird Al's is also called Whatever You Like. So there's two songs called Whatever You Like on the charts at the same time. That's pretty wonderful.
So here's the thing that I remember about this though, right? He puts out this EP And spoiler alert, we're not going to talk about this EP because literally all of these songs ended up on the very next album anyway.
Yeah.
But he put out the EP of Internet Leaks and he did a music video to promote each song. So the timeline that you have to remember is Weird Al says, I'm going to do more digital releases so that I can talk about relevant things.
Yes.
And then he puts out a parody of The Doors called Craigslist. He puts out a White Stripes parody called CNR about Charles Nelson Reilly. And he puts out a Queen parody of Ringtone. And I will never forget seeing Weird Al retweet a tweet that someone had sent at him that said, I'm really glad Weird Al's doing digital releases to talk about timely things like The Doors, Craigslist, Charles Nelson Reilly, and Queen.
It's so true. I mean, you know, in his defense, those were style parodies and not song parodies. I think that's what he was referring to. Like,
exactly,
he wanted to,
but man, was that fun. But that was true, one of the best tweets I think anyone's ever sent.
That is pretty great. Yeah.
Obviously, we're doing everything in our power to not talk about Stop Dragging My Car Around. So Stop Dragging My Car Around, again, the wiki description that someone put on there is a parody of Stop Dragging My Heart Around by Stevie Nicks. And it is a lament of an otherwise cool guy forced to repeatedly save his 1964 Plymouth car from the impound due to illegal parking, shame, and non-payments. Again, we talked about this with Belvedere Cruisin'. I don't know about cars. I don't. Sure, is an 84 Plymouth a cool car?
A 64 Plymouth.
64 Plymouth.
64 Plymouth. Yeah.
Is that a good car, bad car? I don't know.
I'm going to assume it's a bad car, but I couldn't tell you honestly. And again, by today's standards, a nice-looking 64 Plymouth is probably primo stuff. But I don't know. Anyone listening to this who knows about cars, please let us know.
Yeah, let us know how wrong we are about this. We're missing here, but I do think that this, on this album specifically, this is the only song where I think Al is also trying to do a pseudo impersonation of the vocal styles.
Yeah.
You know, because obviously the two that we've already discussed and the two that we will discuss, it's very much just that nasally Weird Al 80s voice. But this one, he is really trying to channel like Tom Petty and Stevie Nicks' vocal inflections, which is cool. And he'll do more of that, I think, in later albums, but not as much as you would think when I look back at it. Like,
not as much. I mean, he's in this weird period where he's kind of trying to decide whether he's like using his own voice or mimicking voices in the same way. And he's like kind of trying to have it both ways a little bit. There's a sense of that. And even though he has the nasal voice, he's still doing a little bit of that in Ricky, emulating the Ricky Ricardo accent and stuff, even though it's not the original. Well, that's different because it's not the song.
He's not trying
doing
to sound
a character
like Tony
from it.
Yeah.
But the voice change, doing different voices at all. I'm just use just that term as like different voices. That sort of fades as we go through his career.
I think you find him doing the vocal inflections more on the style parodies than on the direct parodies anymore.
There are a couple exceptions to that rule I'm thinking of as we move forward.
Oh, for sure. But on the whole, it's like he is, you know, when he does Dare to Be Stupid, he is trying to sound like the vocalist from Devo. He's trying to sound like that versus on that same album, maybe not like a Virgin is a good example, but he's definitely like, he's doing a slightly Madonna-y voice, but it is still that like Al nasal.
Yeah. There's a difference between trying to match someone's cadence, the way they deliver a line, and just the tone of his voice. And for the most part, the tone of his voice doesn't change very much. This one you can definitely hear. And funny enough, Tom Petty is also someone with a pinched sort of nasally vocal, so it's a pretty smooth transition for Al to try to do a Tom Petty.
100%.
Yeah.
And we'll get into, because again, when I'm writing down notes and I'm like, I don't think we're going to have a lot to say, I start to write down what can we talk about, and we'll talk about Tom Petty for a little bit. But I do want to, before we get completely off the topic of the song, this one, something that we've been talking about in the last couple episodes, total 180 from what we were discussing with like Got a Boogie and Buckingham Blues. This has some weird instrumentations all over the introduction of this song.
Super weird. And this is an example we were talking about. Like, this is where I think it's a miss. I actually feel like the accordion, the manualist hand farts, all of that stuff, I do not feel like adds to this track.
No, but I don't think it adds to this track, but I also simultaneously think it might be the best part of this track. I just think it's a bad track.
It's just not that interesting. It's not like it's kind of, it's actually, I was just going to say it's long. I don't even know how long it is, but you were talking about Got a Boogie feeling long. Yeah. To me, this feels long.
I could see a world where they recorded this without all of that stuff.
Yeah.
And Al was like, this isn't one of my
something
best.
Has to happen differently. Yeah, we have yeah to you're, probably add right. to this. You're probably right. You're probably right.
Because it is, I think that this album doesn't have a ton of misses on it, but if we were to put together some of the misses, this was definitely the miss.
Again, I'm revealing something closer to the end of the show, but yeah, to me, this is a low point on this record for sure. It just feels kind of like, again, it's musically not very inspiring. It feels a little bit lazy to me.
Lyrically, it's not that inspiring.
It's not that inspiring at all.
Like, My Bologna to My Sharona just feels like a very seamless transition. Stop Dragging My Heart Around to Stop Dragging My Car Around.
Yeah.
That feels like a forced.
It does. It just doesn't feel as natural. And then all of the lyrics around it are just like, yeah, okay, fine. There's some funny, like, little turns of phrases there. And I'm looking at the lyrics right now just to go back to our car thing. In verse two, it's the person took my baby to the local disco. I was jumping like a maniac, but the owner came and pulled me off the floor. Then he took me to his little office in the back. He said, I really like your snaggletooth necklace. Your pants are groovy and your hair is okay. But man, that car of yours is so uncool. Like, wow, I'm sorry, but we towed it away. It is funny, the idea that the car is just so uncool that it has to be towed. It's not that he's like parked it, because later on it gets into
illegal.
Later on it becomes like a repo thing. Like, he can't afford to pay for it. That's like the verse after that, which is not as funny as the idea that like this car is so shitty that it's embarrassing to be in the parking lot of the disco, so we have to get rid of it. Like, I enjoy that. I think that's a really funny line.
It's just not his best. There's some good ideas here, but it's not Al's finest moment.
No, there's also an interesting lyrical thing on this track that at the very end, in like the sort of outro loop refrain that again runs for a very long time in my head right now, he drops that line. He says like the check's in the mail, which is, I mean, that is just a phrase, but also it is, I guess, a reference. He's internally referencing a future song
later.
It's really like, that's not something I think I've ever heard him do anywhere else. Like, he's almost like, that almost feels like he's in some weird like concept album mode.
Yeah,
where these songs are being stitched together in a way that like, and the whole song doesn't, like, I think this theory will fall apart very, very quickly, but it's odd to hear him be self-referential in that way.
Well, I think that because the verse that you just read the lyrics to also gives me a little bit of a Such a Groovy Guy vibe.
Yeah,
as
that's
well.
True too.
Like it does kind of feel like it's, I don't know. I think this song really feels like it's Frankensteined of parts.
Agreed.
Of better ideas.
Agreed.
It's just, it's a bummer. It's a bummer when every once in a while, and trust me, there's another parody that we're going to talk about on In 3D that I also think is like a huge whiff for him. I think that In 3D, which, you know, we'll get there in a couple weeks, like that, you really start to get that fully formed idea of like when he's doing a parody, like that TLC is there a little bit more than this one. And I think that the irony in that, the thing that's really weird about that is the turnaround time between this and In 3D is 1 year.
Yeah.
But this is like 5 years of ideas getting put together.
Exactly,
like
yeah.
Like, this should have been, this. Well, we're going to talk about a song when we finish the self-titled and are about to go into In 3D. We're going to talk about a song that got cut from this record that I think would have been the best parody on the album, personally. I think I know why it didn't make the cut.
Mm-hmm.
I almost wonder if he decided to cut that song and need it to come up with something to replace it. And this was kind of the thrown together
maybe
thing.
You know, you just touched on something else, which I think is the perfect point on this, which is that usually with his songs, with his parodies specifically, there is no getting, you have no doubt that Al and the band, everybody involved, love the song that they are parodying.
Yes.
And I do not get that sense with this track.
No, not
it doesn't
at all.
And again, who knows? This is just listener perception. I could be totally wrong. This could be Al's favorite song of all time. But it just, you don't get that sense at all. It does not feel like it is being handled with like the sort of respect and care that, again, even I Love Rocky Road still has the accordion and hand farts, but I still get the sense that that is like they know they have something precious that they're working with.
It's almost like anytime that you're an artist, right? Like anytime that you're doing anything, especially a musician, more than any artistry.
Yeah.
Whenever you're deciding to sit down and record a song, you have to know that there is a higher than 50% chance that you are going to have to play that song a lot for the rest of your life.
Sure. Yeah.
You know Absolutely. What I mean? Like, it's like any song that you write at one point could become the fan favorite, where despite how you feel about the song, you're going to have to play it every night for the rest of your career.
There are loads and loads of stories of artists throughout their career who have made that mistake and then been stuck with a song. And, you know, honestly, if you do that, the luckiest break you can get is that you're successful enough that you can ignore that song.
Yeah.
You can be like a Beastie Boys and you can say, we don't have to play Fight for Your Right to Party because we
have
enough.
You can be a Radiohead and just be like, we're never going to play Creep again. Like,
yeah.
But then I also think of the flip side of that, which is like Rob Zombie. I remember hearing an interview where he said, like, do you think I want to sing Dragula every night for the rest of my life? Like, no, but like, it's an expectation, and like, who am I to take people's money and then not give them the song that they probably came there to hear?
Yeah. Like, it's an interesting thing. Cause you know, again, this is like, just to go back to Wheatus for a moment. Cause we get asked this question all the time, of course, about Teenage Dirtbag. And if we get bored of it and tired of it, and to each his own, like I can certainly understand if you're from an artistic perspective, if you feel like you're locked in a box and you have to do this sort of thing, like, but from, we've always said and thought like, it's hard to imagine being angry about performing something that gives people such joy.
I also think that you guys kind of lucked out in the sense of like, Teenage Dirtbag is a very interesting song. Like
it is. We always have fun playing it. It's challenging to play in its own particular way. Like if we don't play for a while, we take a break for the holidays and we come back, there's always an adjustment period to get it back, even when we've been playing it together for years and years and years. Yeah, so, I mean, it being musically interesting does certainly help.
Because I could see, like, I could see getting sick of playing Creep, especially if you're Radiohead out there doing, like, some of the weirdest, trippiest fucking music on the planet. You're probably not, like, super thrilled to get up there and play, like, your little four-chord, just learning how to play guitar grunge song. But, like, Teenage Dirtbag is... There are no other songs that I can think of that sound like Teenage Dirtbag.
Yeah. Yeah. So no, I mean, think that it does
makes
we are,
it easier.
Yeah. We are super proud of it. We're not, you know, like some of those other examples, like you said, for Radiohead, they got so much more interesting than that. For the Beastie Boys, they had, I mean, very publicly, they had issues with a lot of the lyrical content on that record, embarrassed them after the fact. And they were like, well, we don't want to sing these things anymore. And that's totally fair enough. Like if you have issues with it in that sense.
Well, and you and I have even talked about, even with the Wheatus stance, like the sense of humor of 2000 is very different than the sense of humor of 2022. So there are definitely some cringy moments on that Wheatus album.
There certainly are. We talked about it. You know, we just addressed Buckingham Blues has lyrics that now are like, oof, like,
yeah,
they just don't. It's the nature of, generally speaking, if you are trying to be funny,
it often does not age well.
Comedy cannot be evergreen because it has to be topical and of that moment, and you have to be pushing against the edge of what's appropriate at that moment, and what that edge is always moving.
I'll just say that my advice to anybody who was trying to pursue any type of comedy in the digital age, if you haven't hopped on your Twitter account and jumped back about 15, 20 years and decided to delete a couple of those tweets.
Oh my God.
Might be a good idea. I've done that a few times where I'm like, let me just see what like 20-year-old Matt Kelly was putting out in the ether thinking it was funny and being like, yeah, I don't want anyone to find this again.
Yeah, I'd rather get rid of that. It's so true. It's so true. And again, it's not like, you know, you can do these things without any malice or ill intent, you know, to bring it back to Al. I'm sure he did not, you know, who could have envisioned that in what he was making fun of in Buckingham Green was
Buckingham Green.
Buckingham Blues. Buckingham Green is a Ween song that I just forgot. It's funny, when we started to talk about it, I was like, don't call it Buckingham Green. It's Buckingham Blues. That's really funny. Okay. Well, we'll follow this with the Ween podcast after we get through every Weird Al song.
You and Chris Sofalius can do that one.
Oh my God, I'm
that dude loves his Ween.
Oh, we agree on that. But yeah, no, he didn't mean to be that sort of like mean or cold or whatever. It's just that was
in 1983, he didn't know that 15 years later Elton John would be like the best-selling single of all time for like how much the world cried over
memorializing this person. I know. It's like you could never imagine. And also to see in hindsight that she was like basically in her own way a victim of abuse.
She was a victim of abuse, and also kind of I think that Especially then, we still have this issue today. We're back on the Buckingham Blues stuff, which I love because, man, we do not want to talk about Stop Dragging My Car Around. But, like, you know, I think it's very popular at that time, and it's still popular in this time, to, if you see someone doing charitable events that is, like, rich and famous, it's kind of just like, oh, well, like, it's a publicity stunt.
Sure.
But, like, the more you learn about Diana, it's like, oh, there was, it had nothing to do with publicity
no.
for her. That was... It's how I would like to believe that, like, you or I or most of our friends would be, where it's like, look, if we struck gold with money, like, I probably wouldn't move out of the house that I'm in and would be like, this is the amount that I need to just, like, live comfortably.
Yeah.
And, like, let's just donate the rest of this to, like, these causes and these people and, like, do this, that, and the other thing.
Yeah, use it to bolster things that are important to you.
Yes, exactly.
And things that are in need of... of help. Absolutely. Absolutely.
But anyway, so stop dragging my car around. we'll stop dragging this episode around. Where are you putting this on the parody list? You've got I Love Rocky Road as your number one and Ricky is your number two.
Yeah. No, this is at the bottom. So I'm sticking with I Love Rocky Road is the number one parody at this moment. I know we're not going to rank, especially as we do more and more of these. We're not keeping a strict ranking of everything.
Well, I have a document put together for
that. There
you
go. Perfect. But if we were, this is currently at the bottom for me. There's nothing inherently wrong with it. It just feels kind of flat to me. It just, I don't know. It's very, very difficult for me to get excited about any element of this track. I just don't have it in me, unfortunately.
Yeah. I mean, it's at the bottom for me right now. Off the top of my head, I can't think of anything that I'm going to put lower than it, but I'm sure that there are parody songs that I have just completely ignored for the last 25 years that when I hear it, I'll be like, oh, this was way worse than.
Yeah,
than this.
I don't think this will be the permanent bottom. I think that I have a one or two in my head right now that I'm thinking of that I feel similarly about, but probably a little bit worse, but I think they're
right.
A significant amount down the line, so.
And one last question, I guess I hinted at this, but like, let's get into this a little bit. What are your thoughts on Tom Petty? Because I know for me personally, I have argued that the Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers Greatest Hits album is like one of the most must-have greatest hits releases of all time.
I absolutely love Tom Petty, which is all the more reason why this is surprising to me, that this just doesn't feel like, and he never did Tom Petty again, did he? This is
no.
It. So interesting. Like, of all of his songs, it's so weird that this is where, this is it. This is all we got. Cause yeah, no, to me, Tom Petty is like in the top, I don't know, like he ranks among the best American songwriters of all time.
Yes.
He is the top of the top. He's incredible. No, I'm a huge, huge fan.
I really like Tom Petty. I have a decent chunk of his albums. I will make this one statement about Tom Petty, which is not a strike against him,
mm-hmm.
but I think that if you have only heard the hit songs on the radio, you're not really missing anything. Like, there are still really good album tracks,
yeah.
but they definitely knew what were the best songs to be putting out to the public on the radio.
That's fair. Like, I think he has some records that are more hit and miss. I think I could immediately think of like, three or four Tom Petty records that are like, to me, front to back, amazing.
Oh, Into the Great Wide Open comes to me is like
Into the Great Wide Open, Damn the Torpedoes, Wildflowers.
Wildflowers is really good.
I mean, there are Full Moon Fever.
Full Moon Fever's great.
Yeah, I mean, he really like
he had a nice run from the 80s into the 90s.
He had a long career of really like very steady hits. Funny enough, towards the end for him, he moved into what we were just talking about, where he kind of started to lean into a white guy blues thing, which was not my favorite.
Nope.
His last two records, I want to say, were kind of in that world. And I saw him live at that point in time. I'm very glad I got to see him while he was alive. But he really leaned into the blues thing a lot. And I remember at one of them, I hate it. I don't ever mind when an artist wants to play, you know, more recent material. I actually love that. But he did like seven songs in a row from the most recent record. He was like, we're just going to like play some of our new stuff. And it was like seven in a row. And it was really testing my patience. I was like on the verge of walking. Like, I was like, I'm going to have to go get a churro at Madison Square Garden or something to kill this time.
If he had just
spread it out throughout the show. Cause if you do like, you know, if you do Free Fallin' and then you do your new song and then you do I Won't Back Down, I'm on board for that. That's no problem at all. I'm ready.
100%. Locked and Loaded. I think my biggest memory of Tom Petty is that I was very scared of him as a child, because the first two music videos I ever saw by him were both terrifying to me. It was the last
Don't
Dance
Come Around Here No More?
Don't Come Around Here No More and Last Dance with Mary Jane were both like really creepy music videos.
I think that the video for Don't Come Around Here No More traumatized a generation.
Oh, it is. When she is a cake that they are cutting into, it is horrific.
There are really scary imagery in that, and it was everywhere. That's the video got played so much. I talk to people about that oddly often now that I'm thinking about it. The number of times people have said, like, I saw that video as a kid and was like, I can't turn this channel on again.
Yeah,
for years.
I mean, Alice in Wonderland has, from the second that it was turned into a Disney cartoon, maybe even before that, has become such a beautiful template for how to absolutely horrify and scar children.
It's intense, man. It's
I remember the story of like the walrus and the clams. When I watched that Disney cartoon for the first time, I was like, they killed the clam. Like, I was like, I couldn't believe it. I was so messed up from it.
Oh, my God.
And then, to see the music video version of it, where it's like a girl getting chopped up as cake and stuff. It's just, it was horrifying.
It's really, really intense. God, Al should have parodied that.
Dude,
that's true, he did. Like, talking about all these Tom Petty songs, it is just... you can't know, like, from Al's perspective when he made this, like, he doesn't know where Tom Petty's going to go. He doesn't know what his
All the songs to pick.
I know, but man, this was a miss in terms of, like, if you're going to pick one Tom Petty song, choosing this is, like, incorrect.
Yep,
this is the wrong answer.
Bad choice. All right, well, we'll be back next week with another classic parody. I mean, if you have the album, you know where we're going with this. Legitimately the first Weird Al single.
Yes. If we're going to do it by vinyl, this is the first track on the, we're doing the first track on the B-side.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.